Welcome to the new reality edition of Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR 1, where we serve you the first bite of today's science, technology, and innovation. I'm Bert Lum, and on today's show, we have Amara Shaker-Brown. She's a consultant and internet policy advisor, and she used to work at the National Democratic Institute, and she joins me all the way from some island on the East Coast, and we're glad to have her on to talk about the World Summit on the Information Society, also known as WISIS, and we'll sometimes refer to it as WISIS. But Amara, I want to welcome you to Bite Marks Cafe.
Hi, Bert. Thank you so much for having me. Excited about this conversation.
Well, let me kind of frame it up and put it in some context. Now, I have mentioned before that, you know, I went to Geneva, Switzerland, and attended the World Summit on the Information Society. And in one of the breakout sessions, which was really kind of talking about the future of WISIS and things like the Internet Governance Forum, I sat next to Amara and we were sort of talking about, you know, what is this process that we're now in? And to keep in mind, the World Summit on the Information Society is an initiative that is housed in the United Nations. And this was something that was done 20 years ago. And over the course of the 20 years, there's been quite a bit of, you know, programmatic activity. And Amara, we can, you know, we can sort of get into this. But I want to give you a chance to talk a little bit about how did you get into this sort of internet policy world and start really, really kind of tracking the progress of organizations like, you know, WISIS and the Internet Governance Forum, and having a, you know, having a good understanding. I mean, sitting next to you, I learned quite a bit in that I think it was like maybe a short hour and a half, but it was very eye-opening. And I wanted to ask you, how did you get into this sort of business at this international level?
Yeah, it. I think as with so many people who get into somewhat niche policy roles, it happened a little bit by accident. I graduated from grad school during COVID in international studies and diplomacy. I have a background in tech and specifically women in tech, mm-hmm. and I had done some work on the online safety side, and so I had been doing more work on sort of content moderation, safety, and digital security. And then when I started with the tech team at the National Democratic Institute, I started on this program that really wanted to focus on internet governance and, you know, how this thing that all of us use every single day and don't really think about it, we don't think about the email that we send, we assume that that will always be sent to the correct place as mm-hmm. long as we have an internet connection. Google will always be Google. And sort of our program really dove into what these international treaties and agreements mean. No one knows about them. Mm-hmm. I barely knew about them. And we focused at NDI a lot on the global majority and how to make sure that the, you know, unbelievable skewing of power that has continued throughout history wasn't replicated in some of these new laws. And as you mentioned, as some of these reviews are coming this year, really trying to focus on getting representatives from the majority of the world into these rooms where the agreements are happening, and not just as a token representative, but really getting getting meaningful participation and getting experts from users around the world. So it was really, really interesting, and I felt lucky to be able to go to WISIS this year, even though I wasn't with NDI anymore, to be able to sort of stay updated and see where some of these agreements were going.
Well, you bring up a really great point, and this is another discussion that I wanted to have. And, you know, one of the reasons why I went to WSIS was because I felt that given the agenda and the topics they were talking about, it was really closely tied to the work that we were doing, you know, in digital equity and digital inclusion and digital literacy. And I thought, that's really interesting because at an international level, that's a really important topic. And you talked about the, you know, the global majority. And on a state level, you know, we sometimes refer to that, we refer to the marginalized communities, you know, rural communities that sometimes often get, you know, forgotten. And I wanted to kind of hear it from an international lens and also find sort of like the support that's out there, given that our current administration doesn't really support some of the equity work, you know, that's going on at the state level throughout, you know, the U.S. So it was really refreshing to hear about the work that continues on. But at the same time, Amara, I mean, you were directly affected by some of the decisions by this administration in the form of, you know, cutting funds out of USAID. And that had a direct kind of impact in the work that you do at NDI.
Yes. Like so many of my colleagues who worked in or near international development, NDI lost almost, I believe, 90% of its funding. We were funded by USAID. And so our entire tech and democracy team was let go. So we were able to pass along some of our work to some of our international partners. Obviously, it was really disappointing to not be able to continue this work. We believe really, really strongly that it not only is good for human rights and good for, you know, equity, inclusion, and keeping the internet safe and free and interoperable, but it's a huge national security boon as well to keep the internet a democratic place.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it was disappointing, but as you say, it was heartening to see other governments really stepping up. I think there always could be more funding if any foundations are listening. Fund projects. Doesn't have to be my project, but fund projects. But I think it's mostly, I think, European governments that are leading the way at the moment, but I'm hoping that other governments will also step in to fill some of the voids that the U.S. Funding pullbacks have left.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a good point. I mean, the U.S. as a developed country has spent quite a bit of money, you know, helping to move this agenda forward and having an eye on, you know, some of these sort of marginalized communities. And in the U.S., we might call them, you know, the marginalized and disenfranchised. But then at a national and international level, there's countries that are developing that need support as well. And, you know, it's really kind of fascinating to see how what we do kind of at a state level has an impact or can translate into something that's happening at an international level. Now, I do want to give you a chance to talk a little bit about sort of the timeline of WSIS, you know, the World Summit on the Information Society, and what is, you know, what is sort of happening at this 20-year mark. So we'll hold that thought. We'll be right back at a short break to continue our conversation with Amara Shaker Brown. And she's a consultant right now, former internet policy person over at the National Democratic Institute. And of course, we're talking about the World Summit on the Information Technology. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors PCAT, Pacific Center for Advanced Technology Training, and the Rice Partnership.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Bert Lum. And if you're just joining us, we're talking to Amara Shaker Brown. And we're talking about the World Summit on the Information Society. And right before the break, Amara, you know, this World Summit on the Information Society has been going on for 20 years. It's referred to as WISIS. You know, everybody over there was telling me, yeah, just call it WISIS because it's too long to say, you know, World Summit on Information Society. So this 20 years kind of path, it sort of started back in Geneva, right? And this was back in, 2005, right? 2005. And it was an idea, I guess, that gravitated, got traction, and got funding out of the United Nations that recognized that this thing called the internet was really taking off, and that there should be some kind of multi-stakeholder convening that could help to guide its kind of path forward. Is that a, you know, fairly close assessment of what was decided upon back in 2005?
Yeah. As you say, it was, people were realizing it was not just a fad, and it really needed a global group of stakeholders to understand and guide what it would look like. And so in addition to agreeing that it should be, you know, accessible, it should be collaborative, innovation-based, multi-stakeholder, so, you know, not just run by governments, they wanted to make sure that there was a set place for that. And so there's something called the Internet Governance Forum, mm-hmm. or IGF, as with all UN things, full of catchy acronyms that everyone will always remember. but the IGF is a yearly meeting where all of these multi-stakeholder actors, so governments, tech companies, civil society, technical experts and standards people, academia, media, everyone is able to get together and talk about what's been going on. As you can imagine, AI has been a very popular theme the last couple years, but throughout the last 20 years, it has been a really key place, and one of the only places that everyone can get together and every expert can have sort of equal footing and the ability to actually talk about the problems that everyone is facing and enact, suggest real solutions to governments, and they have access to those governments.
You know, one of the things that I learned, and you brought it up just now, that people who get convened as a result of WISIS or the Internet Governance Forum are kind of peer-to-peer. And these two terms, we don't usually hear too much about it here in Hawaii, but there's a big difference between multi-stakeholder and multilateral. Maybe you can explain kind of the difference between multi-stakeholder and multilateral.
Absolutely. And I love this stuff, and it took me a little bit to get all of the jargon down, the UN jargon. But multilateral is governments only. Mm-hmm. So it is, if you say a meeting is multilateral or an agreement is multilateral, governments were the only ones in the room and with a voice and with a decision-making power. And one of the reasons we push so hard against multilateral decision-making is because, especially around something like tech, if you don't have technical experts and human rights experts and civil society in the room with some form of decision-making influence, the laws or the standards or frameworks that are created can very easily be not only just implausible because they make no sense with the tech, but it really opens the door for authoritarian government. So to civil rights people, civil society, human rights actors, multi-stakeholderism is a really key bolster against authoritarian and dictator led governments. And we see that playing out right now in sort of the push for the next 20 years of internet and digital governance.
And that's a really, you know, that's a really great observation, which I don't know if, you know, a whole lot of people recognize that the dynamic that you just described is taking place. And, you know, in terms of where this WSIS process goes, and this WSIS plus 20 was a particular, I wouldn't say deadline, but it was an objective to decide after 20 years what happens to this WSIS process, and then what happens to one of the key organizations that came out of WSIS called the Internet Governance Forum, what happens to that. And, you know, in, I guess, before we get into, you know, what you think might happen and the influences that are coming to bear on that decision, you know, when multi-stakeholder folks get together and they're coming together peer-to-peer, and like you said, it's much more varied in terms of, you know, the technical people, the private sector, the civil society, you know, it's across the board. What are some of the things that you've observed coming out of a convening that's multi-stakeholder that had a real impact on the future or where the internet was going and setting a direction for the internet?
Yeah, I think especially, I mean, the last, I'm compared to some people who have been working on this since 2005, mm-hmm. I'm a relative newcomer, but most non-governmental actors are very aligned that the strong multi-stakeholder approach, though the current, it may be imperfect, is the best we have, and we must do everything we can to really advocate for its continued framework, mm-hmm. and keeping it, because it is, you know, civil society and the private sector are not often, I would say, on the same side of laws and regulations. But in this case, it is, you know, if the internet as we know it breaks, that affects human rights and e-commerce in similar ways, in that it blocks both of our agendas. So it was a somewhat unusual common voice among most, not all, but most academia, private sector, civil society, and the technical community, and quite a few governments really doing all they can to maintain that the multi-stakeholder approach should be improved, but not not thrown away for this whole new process that mm-hmm. the UN introduced last year.
Well, that's a great point, and I think we could kind of get into that, because these are some of the pressures that are now being placed on WSIS, and there's a deciding point in December. So we'll talk about that. We'll hold that thought. We'll be right back after this short break to continue our conversation with Amara Shaker Brown. And we're talking about the World Summit on the Information Society. This is Bite Marks Cafe. Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum, right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HBR1. And if you're just joining us, we're talking to Amara Shaker Brown, and we're talking about the World Summit on the Information Society. And right before the break, we were talking about the fact that, you know, the 20th World Summit took place in Geneva this past July. And what does that mean? And for me, I mean, this is my first one in attendance, and it was quite clear to me that there's a sort of like a transition, a pivot point. And as I spoke to more people about it, there are a couple things that sort of start to indicate which potential direction it might go. Now, keep in mind, the World Summit is and the IGF, Internet Governance Forum, kind of is based out of the United Nations in Geneva. And that's, keep that in mind. That's the physical location of that, you know, initiative. Now, there's, we all know, there's a United Nations headquarters in Washington, D.C. and
New York City.
Oh, New York City. Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
And so, Amara, what is at this point being decided upon, which is supposed to be talked about at the General Assembly in December?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the biggest differences between the two headquarters are that in Geneva, the headquarters of the other big UN institutions, most people know the World Health Organization, the World Trade Organization, but the International Telecommunications Union, which runs all of the digital, and then some critical standard-setting bodies, are also based in Geneva.
Mm-hmm.
And so that really is the multi-stakeholder capital, and New York is just the country diplomats, and so that is the multilateral center. UN experts, I know I have oversimplified your life's work in a major way, but something passed last year in the UN General Assembly called the Global Digital Compact, which we do not have to go into too much, but the key thing is that it is run out of an office in New York, and so it is trying to move the center of power on internet governance and some of these issues from Geneva, where you would have all of these multi-stakeholder experts together, to New York, where you really, it's the multilateral center of power. So in December, the New York General Assembly will decide on WISIS and will decide what the next 20 years look like.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the key things there is whether the IGF remains and what it looks like if it does. And that is something that a lot of civil society, human rights defenders are looking at, because they see it as kind of a bellwether of if that goes, that really opens the door for authoritarian regimes, authoritarian takeovers. And if you look at who has been supporting multilateral decision-making versus multi-stakeholder, you've got China, you've got Russia, you've got more authoritarian regimes who want more control over their internet space,
mm-hmm.
which means, you know, all sorts of things in terms of rights violations or the potential for rights violations. And it could happen, as we know, in democratic societies as well. So that's what is going to happen in December. And it is a multilateral decision. So those of us not in government can advocate as much as we want, and we have a little bit of time to do it. But it will be up to the UN member states at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting and scary at the same time, because as you mentioned, you have China, you have Russia. There's the potential for something called a splinter net to occur, and how the internet kind of evolves from this point on will be pretty determined by what happens with WISIS and the IGF. And I should also mention that, you know, when WISIS started and when the IGF was formed, it was formed as a, I don't know how to correctly say it, but it was still an initiative. It was not like a formal organizational structure. So I don't know how the funding was arrived at, but there must be some advocation for funding every year to keep, you know, keep the program going for the 20 years. And I think some of the write-ups that I've seen would like to see the Internet Governance Forum become a more permanent organizational entity, you know, within WSIS and within the ITU. So is that something you see being decided upon, you know, this December?
That's a great question. I'm not sure I see the UN putting up any more, promising any more specific money right now,
mm-hmm.
Anywhere, because I know that they're dealing with loss of funding on many different levels. I think the worry is that the IGF may be struck entirely. I think some recent trends seem to think that it might stay, which would be great. But I know that funding, as always, is a huge issue. So, but my guess would be, at first, it would just be whether the IGF continues and how WSIS would tie into this new process that was started last year through the New York mechanism.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, you know, we're kind of coming toward the end of the show, and I love all the information and the sharing that you've done for our audience here, Amara. So in terms of, you know, where you see yourself playing, I mean, do you want to stay in this kind of space?
Yes, I would love to. I would love to try. I think with AI coming in and with very little regulation and frameworks there, I think there's some openings to hopefully be able to continue this mm-hmm. work. Perhaps in the private sector, perhaps not in the U.S., but I think it's really important. I've been doing some consulting, trying to, you know, help people bridge that information gap, and I hope to be able to continue to do that for the next at least couple years.
Well, Amara, where can people find out more information about what we just talked about? I know it's a pretty broad scope, but where would you suggest people go check out? What website would you recommend?
Well, I would do the Internet Society, which I could send the link, but also Global Partners Digital does a lot of really good not simple analysis, but it's accessible. And that is gp-digital.org.
Very good. I'll put that up on our show notes. Amara Shaker-Brown, consultant and Internet Policy Advisor, used to work at the National Democratic Institute. Amara, I want to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a great conversation.
And thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. Join us next week when we'll talk about the Internet Governance Forum. If you miss any part of this edition, you can find the podcast of tonight's show on bitemarkscafe.org. Our engineer is David Chong. You can catch us on HPR One every Friday or anytime via the HPR app or your favorite podcast application. In the meantime, you stay safe. You stay awesome. We'll see you next week on another edition of Bite Marks Cafe.